Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Dr. Craig Sider. Craig has been a leader. He's been a CEO. He's led organizations through growth. And for over three decades, he has served leaders from business, nonprofit, and education. And he has written a new book entitled Beyond Your Box, Break Free to Pursue Your Dream. And he's going to be talking about some insights from that book. Looking forward to today's conversation with Craig. Well, give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career history. We'd love to the audience to hear a little bit of how you got into where you are today.
Yeah, you know, everybody might clue out, but I'm a Canadian living in the U.S. I'm actually a dual citizen, but grew up in Canada. Yeah, almost within sight of Niagara Falls. And then my career, which started with church, leading at a church, starting a church actually from scratch in Toronto, led me down to the States in leadership. And then I launched a leadership institute along with a seminary. And then for 9 years was CEO, president and CEO of a nonprofit based out of Manhattan, which really had scope around the world. Just really exciting. And then 2 years ago, I launched In Focus Leadership, which really walks alongside leaders. And with that group, particularly in the age 35 to 45, I spend time with leaders outside that, but that's really the sweet spot for me.
Okay. Well, that's a great age group. We've got a lot of listeners that would fit that age and kind of their maybe first-time leaders or maybe a little bit further in their career. If you were able to spin back time and talk to a impressionable 22-year-old Craig, what advice would you give him knowing what you know now?
Yeah, I'd probably say risk more and identify that the obstacles you're trying to overcome are actually external or whether they're internal. I think sometimes I thought they were outside of me when really they were inside of me. And when you get knocked around a few times in leadership, you begin to learn, I think maybe it's me. And so you begin to address some things inside of you. So I would say risk more and just figure out whether you're the obstacle or if it actually is somebody outside.
So did you have mentors that you purposely connected with early in your career? Did you have some people that you drew from?
Yeah, this sounds too easy, but I actually grew up in a family business where my dad was also in ministry. So those two weren't split apart in my mind. So actually in high school, one of my brothers and I ran a business where we hired other high school students and did that for all my high school years. My dad was really a mentor in that he allowed us to take risks and allowed us to stretch. He also was willing to call you on the carpet if you didn't take responsibility. So I'd say I really learned a lot of leadership from him. And then my first boss, which was at an educational institution, just taught me a lot too. And then reading. I just learned so much from reading other people.
Great. So you have a book that you've written. It came out the end of last year. And talk a little bit about that. It's entitled Beyond Your Box. Subtitles, Break Free to Pursue Your Dream. Tell me a little bit about the story, backstory of that and how you came to write that book.
Yes. Some people said, did you go around with a box trying to figure out what you could write about? Actually, I observed people. It really started one day, Mark, when I was having coffee with Phil in a coffee shop and he had started an organization. It had grown. It was successful. Everybody looking in on him would say, man, Phil's a success. And as we began to unpack it, he goes, I don't like where I am. I mean, I like what I've built, but it's not me. I'm spending time doing things I don't want to do and not what I'm good at. And it doesn't fire up with my passion. And I began to think, he is stuck. And I've often used a box analogy, you know, any kind of box will do it. I thought, well, the definition of a box is there's space outside the box. So I began to explore with him, well, what's it look like if we're a year from now And you're describing what you really want to be true. And what he began to paint was something that was a different air. That got my mind spinning about boxes. And then all the poor folks I would meet with, like business leaders or nonprofit leaders, I think, man, I think they're stuck there. So it really grew out of my interactions and experiences with leaders really all around the world.
So you've written some boxes that people find themselves in. Give me a few of those that you think a lot of, as you're coaching people and helping them kind of figure out where they're stuck.
Yeah, it's interesting. I say, I identified 17 boxes and I had to decide what order do I put them in? Mm-hmm. And you put them in any order and people say, well, this one's most important because you put it first. And then I put them alphabetically because the most important box is the box you're in, right? The rest of them really don't matter to you. And so some of the ones that I saw early on were a boredom box. I remember speaking to a leader who's, again, people looking in at him say, I'd like what he has. And as I began to talk with him, I said, you're bored. He goes, oh my goodness, I'm bored. Well, that's a boredom box. There's a bulging box. I was with, a leader who's done really well in his career. And I asked him, because we were both faith guys, I said, how can I pray for you? And he goes, that I'll have margin. And, you know, he still has this bulging box he's in. I think one of the most interesting ones is my son. My son went into the family business that I went in, that my dad was in, that my grandfather was in, that his father-in-law was in, that his uncle was in. And about 3 years in, he said, I think I'm living somebody else's life. And he quit to be a painter. Somebody said a house painter. No, he's a hyper-realist painter and is doing exceedingly well. And he said, I was actually living in somebody else's box. And then another one might be for guys who are more my age, and I'm in my 60s, is the what next box, where they've had a very successful career. I was just on a Zoom with a lady this morning in that very situation, who had a very successful career and kind of closed the door on that chapter. But then what next? And I handed the book to a friend, and I give lots of caveats in the book. I said, look, I'm not trying to put you into anything. So if you don't feel like you're in a box at all, just hand it to a friend. I said, now don't be surprised if at some point the friend hands it back to you and says, no, actually, I think you're in the, so this guy, this friend said, no, I don't, I think it'll be really good for some people. I don't think I have anything. Next time I saw him, he goes, you know, I think I might be in the what next box, because I'm trying to figure out, what do I do with the next chapter of my life? So it really grew, Mark, out of my conversations with people. And that's a few of them. I think I identified 17, but 18 is, what is it that I haven't described? So,
So as you're thinking back to that first leadership position that you had, mm-hmm. you know, most people go from, they're really good at something, and then somebody sees that in them. They say, now you can lead people. And a lot of times you're not prepared for that. But what are some things that you wish you would have known earlier in your leadership?
I think some of it you can only learn by doing it. Mm-hmm. So I have multiple degrees, but degrees give you the theory. So growing up in a family business actually helped me observe some things before I could even give language to it. So I'm learning things today. I'm not trying to avoid your question. I'm learning things today because I'm encountering new experiences today that I have to learn from. But I gave one early on, and that is, I'm responsible. A box for a lot of people is the blame box. And if only my boss, if only my colleague, if only my husband, if only my spouse, if only my kids, and I'm looking for everybody else to change something. I went for a walk one time. I was probably in my late 20s, and I was doing fairly well. At least people thought I was. And I was talking with this seasoned leader, and I said, you know, if only the group that leads all of this would do this and this and this and this. And he was identifying with me. And then he said, Craig, what really is stopping you from doing what you need to do? I said, well, really nothing. We said, then do it. So I think early on it would be don't place blame on other people. When I can take responsibility for my leadership and grow and make changes. And many times I put up mental blocks in my mind when really that's all they are. And I need to work through them. Oh, there's so many things I could learn, how to handle people better, how to get out of my own way. One of the books I like is Leadership and Self-Deception, which is really how do you get outside of your leadership, look in on yourself and say, you need to do better than that. Leadership's too much about you. And I think that's a lesson that I learned early on as well. Or at least I'm learning. I'm learning, Mark. I'm not sure if I've learned it yet. I'm learning.
So talk about some of the daily habits that you have that you think have helped you as a leader. Leading yourself, I think, is some of the hardest things to do as far as a leader. But talk about that.
I'd say about three things. One is I try and look at my next day. Well, let me even back up. I begin by what do I want to accomplish? Now, again, I'm a person of faith, so meditation and prayer kind of weaves in that. But if I look over the year, if I look over a week, where do I sense it is I need to go? And then how do I frame my life, my work life, in order to accomplish that? I have up on my whiteboard, which is in a different office here where I live, this things accelerates what I do. These things are neutral to what I do. And these things don't make a world of difference to what I do. Hmm. I've identified those. So I try and look at my time in terms of what will move me to where I sense I need to go. Then what I do a day before is I look at the next day. And I said, okay, I've kind of mapped out this today. Like today I have 4 Zooms with different people. And I try and bring myself to think through what do I sense it is I'm to do in each one of these Zooms. This morning, I coached a leader in Chicago for an hour and a half. But I don't just get on there and try and wing it. I try and think, how can I be most helpful, given what he said before? And then always for me in the morning is to kind of still myself. So for me, again, not to overplay this because I'm a person of faith, I tend to read scripture. I tend to think about other people. I really start with my family and say, how can I best serve them today? And then I, you know, screw it up in the day and have to come back and make it all right. But I try and center myself in terms of what does God want to do through me today and how can I make a difference? And then I think the last thing, and this has been more of a last decade, is how can I be fully present with the person I'm with instead of thinking about something else or thinking ahead to what needs to be done? How can I be present with Mark in the moment, as it were? Yeah. So these are some practices I do.
Yeah, those are great, definitely great practices. And yeah, I've got a little thing on my desk that reminds me to be present, because that's one of my toughest things to do is to be present in the moment and aware of what that we're thinking about. Our devices are buzzing or they're, you know, something else that's distracting us. So yeah, definitely great advice. So I know you've got some books on your bookshelf behind you, and I know you continue to develop as a leader. Besides your book, what other books would you recommend to leaders?
Yeah, one I mentioned, and that is by the Arbinger Institute, which is Leadership and Self-Deception, which I confess I must have read it 15 years ago. I think it sells more every year than it has the year before, because it's one of these growing books, and it really tells you how to step out of yourself as a leader and look in on how you function with other people. And that was really formative for me at a time when I had a lot of people that I was responsible for, and I really needed to observe how I could be a better leader. Another one that was formative was Marshall Goldsmith, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. I even like the premise of the book, which says you always have to be growing as a leader. You know, don't stall out. I remember meeting with a school superintendent one time, and I said, when I think of you, how can I be helpful? He says, that I don't just solve tomorrow's problems on what I've learned in the past. Now, that is a great statement. And I think what Marshall Goldsmith says is there's some debilitating weakness in you as a leader that's keeping you from your next step. You know, the kind of thing that nobody really will tell you, but everybody knows. So Marshall's book was really good. And then Covey's 7 Habits for Highly Effective People. Those are just core realities. And I find myself when I'm coaching leaders, and I have to remind myself of it, is what are my big rocks? And that's one of the things he talks about. What are the big rocks that if I spend my time in these are really going to move the needle? I need to remind myself of that constantly. And I do that when I talk with other leaders as well. So those are some books. And as you can see, I have a number of books behind me. So
yeah. Well, what favorite quotes from that you refer to often?
One is by Jesus. What does it gain a person if they gain the whole world? I think profit, it says, but gain the whole world and lose their soul, their heart. And one of the things I've learned over the last number of years, and I say this with a great amount of respect, is I'm not intimidated by wealthy people anymore. I respect enormously what they've accomplished, and you know, whether they're accelerated to a high level or have just made a lot of money. But at the end of the day, they're a man or a woman, and they're a real person, and they have things they're trying to work through. And it really rings back to what Jesus said. You know, what's you don't really gain a lot by gaining the whole world and not being a contented person in your heart or in your soul. So I would say that's probably the guiding statement for me in life. I'll park it there.
So I wasn't going to ask this question, but I think a lot of leaders maybe start well, but they don't finish well. You've seen a lot of leaders in your that you've coached over time. And what are some things, again, this is probably for some of our listeners are going, okay, I've got a long career. But what would you say to the leaders about finishing well in your career as well as in life?
Yeah, that's interesting, Mark, because that really goes to why I've decided to invest in 35 to 45 year olds, which, by the way, I learn as much, if not more, from them than I ever can give to them and depart with them. But I think it's during that decade, I call it the window of opportunity, because how you respond in that decade will determine whether you plateau coming out of it, you crash and burn coming out of it, or you accelerate coming out of it. Because I think up until that phase, we go a lot on our natural abilities and strengths, and then some of our flaws begin to show. And if we address either those character issues or those skill incompetencies in that decade, we can come out the other side and flourish, or we'll plateau and burn. So I think it's really important to have individuals or a context in our life where we can address those periods. If we just push people away and they're consistently saying a theme to us, you know, if you would, then it's going to be to our detriment. Now, when you come out of that, there's a new book by, I don't know how new it is, it's Arthur Brooks, From Strength to Strength. And he was the CEO of the American Enterprise Institute. Now he's a professor at Harvard, and his most popular class is on happiness. So his book, From Strength to Strength, is how do you go from your 30s and 40s as a leader when you're really the innovator and you come up with new ideas, but then you get into your 50s and 60s, you have so much to offer. But the new ideas are often coming now from younger women and younger men. How are you willing to transition yourself and really see your leadership as about elevating other people more than it is about continually trying to be elevated yourself as a leader? So know what transition you're in, and also address those debilitating weaknesses and those character flaws in that middle part of your life, I think is really crucial. Because as you say, And, you know, by God's grace, I haven't experienced that, but I've had too many friends who have kind of crashed and burned because that character issue surfaced in their 50s and just undermined their what was exceptional gifts and abilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Great wisdom for sure. So outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
I'm a sports guy. I'm more by watching these days than I am by playing. I had too many injuries when I was playing, but you know, I'll watch almost any sport. Right now I'm watching the NCAA men and women's basketball, and both are very exciting. And I like to read. I really enjoy reading. It kind of finds it stimulating. And though, then when you get to my age, Mark, you gravitate now more toward pickleball than you do basketball and tennis and those kinds of things. So that's kind of my sports endeavors these days. And I love to travel. I've been a number of places around the world. I love adventure. People ask me, what's your favorite city? And I say, the next city, just because I like exploring them. So
parting advice you would give to a leader?
It's not about you, but it starts with you. So leadership is really about other people. It's about bringing out the best in other people to accomplish this grand vision or goal that you have. But it really does start with you and how you, just to write back what you said at the beginning, you asked me, how you handle your own life and your own leadership is really a critical piece. So it's not about you, but it starts with you is kind of my parting words.
Yeah, this has been great, Craig. Appreciate you taking time out. Encourage everybody to pick up your book. And how would they learn more about your work and what you're doing?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, they could go on infocusleadership.org. And that's where I kind of serve leaders around the world in this 35 to 45 age bracket. And be happy for you to poke around on the website.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to the next book. I always say that to people that have written a book, and they're like, ah, I got through this one, but I'm sure you've got another one on the horizon.
Oh, you're kind. I've done some thinking, so I'll let you know.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.